I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everybody and welcome to this. It is the Rugby Dungeon. Now I was going to tell you where you can find us on Twitter, etc., but I'm going to jump straight into it because I am joined by Tom Cruise, the more famous one. How are you, mate?
Really good. Pleasure to be here, mate.
Now, you must get a lot of that Tom Cruise banter.
It's every time I meet someone new, whether it be at the supermarket or whatever, bumping into people, mate, I always get it. But my parents seem to think he wasn't famous at the time, but he definitely was. I was 89.
During like peak cocktail?
Yeah, mate, honestly, I was 89 and I think Top Gun was 88 or something like that. So yep. He was definitely famous enough.
So the one that makes me laugh, right, is... Actually, how many Twitter followers do you have? Because I imagine that's...
Interesting, actually. I've got, not that I've been counting, I think I've got about 5,000 or something like that. But there was a time when I first got the blue tick and I did change the picture over and I did sneak a few followers. So a bit of a fraudster, really.
But. Exactly. Well, talking to fraudsters, a friend of the podcast, I would say, Tom Brady, 107 followers for... the backup Leicester Tigers wing.
Yeah, he loves a little spontaneous tweet about the Super Bowl or something as well, just to catch a few bites.
So, pretty heavy game for you on Friday.
Yeah, it was, mate. Obviously, really disappointing. To lose in that manner at the end of the game, it was pretty heartbreaking to be honest. But I suppose. We got into a good lead and let sail back into it. And do you know what? Fair play. They probably deserve the win in the end.
Now, does this game mean any more to you? Sorry, I say this game because if you're listening in the past or in the future, I should say, Tom has just finished playing against Sale. Does this fixture mean any more to you? Because obviously you were picked up by Sale initially.
They're all big games, really, aren't they? I know it's a bit cliche, but, Sale were the people who opened the door of professional rugby to me. So It's not somewhere, I got released after a year, but it's not somewhere I hold, any bitterness or anything like that. It's somewhere that I enjoy going back to play. Not really, if I'm honest.
So just tell us a little bit about you then. It's quite a cool story how you ended up at Wasps. So just give us a little bit of a breakdown of like how you got there.
I suppose unorthodox route. I didn't do any academy stuff. I played a lot of my rugby in the leagues, national leagues, National 3, National 2 for Stockport, which is obviously just my local club. I was playing there till I was 22. I actually signed a contract at Macclesfield off the back of that we were in National 1. I was obviously really looking forward to that. And then got picked up by Pete Anglesey to go to Sale that year.
Okay. Did you do your stint with the Jets?
I did, yeah. I was that guy who was a guest player while I was at Stockport. And then, I played a lot of Jets games in the year I was at Sale. And then, off the back of that, ended up at Rotherham for a couple of years, which was, probably my favourite couple of years that I've played to date. Absolutely brilliant place to be in the Championship. And I'd probably say that was the making of me, to be honest.
So we were talking before the podcast, the Championship is brutal.
It's absolutely brutal. I think I was actually thinking about this on the way down because, the teams that come down from the Premiership have the money and they have the facilities to recover. So, it might seem like a minor detail, but, they have the ice baths, they have the food, they have the facilities to recover. I'm at Rotherham for 2 years. I'm, playing 60, 70 minutes a week. And then, all of a sudden you're coming up against, Bristol, for example, in February. And you're feeling absolutely knackered.
And you travel down there.
Exactly, yeah, on the day. And yeah, mate, it's absolutely brutal, to be honest. But it's a great league.
So, Rotherham, they all full-time professionals?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Financially, you might not think it. There's a boys who they kind of scrape by, but they, you know, they're trying to hold on to that dream and try and get to the top tier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, how is the atmosphere in, like, a Rotherham in terms of lads? Because it does sound like you're all kind of in it together. There's no, like, six-figure salaries there.
No.
I'm sure that the car park isn't quite as smart as the one in Wasps.
Well, I think the thing you have is you have each other. You don't have a lot of money. You know, it's we used to say, you know, stay humble. You know, you're forced to be a tight-knit group. And a matter of fact, most of my mates at the moment, or should I say most of my mates, are from my time at Rotherham. Because,
yeah,
you know, we got that close. Wasp-wise, you know, everyone does their own thing. You know, naturally, you know, people are on better salaries. And obviously with our move to Coventry as well, a lot of boys like to get back to London a lot as well.
Well, you must have found that playing, well, the difference between, like, Stockport and Macclesfield, I guess. Because when you start paying money, I mean, we saw it around here, I think, a few years ago with Manchester. It's just a different ethos in the club. Like, you're travelling to Mac, you play your games, everyone travels back to where they come from, they don't live in the same area, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting you say that about the money, because I think, you know, you're playing in National 3, National 2, maybe don't get anything. Maybe, you know, you might get expenses. And then when you get to National 1, I suppose when you do start getting paid, I think you probably have a duty to get that little bit more professionalism.
Yeah. But I just think it must be miserable, you know. Like, if you were playing, say, you know, let's say Nat 2 or Nat 3, and they're paying you whatever it is a game, and you've got to drive there on your own, then you've got to drive back on your own, and it's just not quite the same. So I think, you know, when you get the money involved, it's got to be worth the while. It's got to be good enough to keep you engaged.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I agree with you, but I think the main reason for playing when you're in National 3 and National 2 is probably, you know, social. You're playing with your mates. And then obviously as you get to Nat 1 and you get a bit more money, you know, maybe that can be the deciding factor of where you play.
So when you went to Mac then, and this is brilliantly regional, I absolutely love this, what was your intention? Were you thinking, like, I just want to play as high as I can? Or was the thought, actually, I think I can go a bit higher than Mac, I want to showcase myself?
No, mate, honestly, I fully stumbled across professional rugby. I was buzzing with my contract to sign at Macclesfield, you know,
yeah.
National 1, one below the Championship, you know, Professional League. And it was just purely, you know, try and play as high as I can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was actually, you know, it was a really big deal for me. And actually, after I'd signed that contract is when I ended up at Sale for a year, which, you know, came really out of the blue. And obviously, you know, it was a massive moment for me.
Yeah, I used to play against Macclesfield quite a lot at second team level. And, oh, my God, I mean, the difference in standard between the Broughton Park second team and the Macclesfield second team is absolutely frightening.
Yeah.
I think I played against a lad called, and again, this is very, very regional, Jack Moore?
Morehouse. Yep.
I think he scored 6 tries.
He's a good player. Jack's at Sale FC now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well when Sale FC set up, because you remember, Sale FC were like, maybe level 8? Maybe level
at
9?
At that time.
Yeah. And they were slowly, like, getting up. And I think when they got to, like, I don't know, say level 6 or level 5, that's when they started bringing in all the lads from Stockport and Macclesfield. They're quite a formidable team now.
They are, mate, to be honest. I think they have that link with Sale Sharks, don't they?
Yeah.
And I think there is an idea there somewhere to kind of get to a level where, you know, fringe players or senior academy players can then go to Sale FC and play their rugby and play every week, as opposed to, you know, just the odd Jets game.
Yeah. Well, the problem is with the A-League now is there's just not enough games. I'm not sure how valuable the A-League is. One other thing, yeah, it's very valuable for young players, but on the other hand, half the teams aren't even fulfilling their fixtures.
I think, yeah, when it gets to the point where, like you say, teams are pulling out of fixtures.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And teams are putting out, you know, half the team isn't contracted players, they're guest players, you've got to start wondering how beneficial it is.
Yeah, I completely agree. I thought when they slimmed it down a bit, that'd be better. But, you know, you look at this is one of my bugbears. When you look at, say, the Jets, they will get in guest players. Now, I don't know why someone like Worcester can't get in enough guest players to fulfil a fixture. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, it depends kind of where you are and what clubs you have around you and, it's availability, because it's a Monday night, isn't it? And you know, you might try and sneak a training session in before the game and stuff. So at the end of the day, people work, don't they? We're fortunate enough to do it for a living, but you know, these guest players are probably working a 9-5 and then coming after work.
Tell me, when you, Mark, was there that relationship with Sale where they were loaning out players still?
No, there was no relationship. My coach at Macclesfield, Jeff Woppett, hated the fact that I was on loan from Sale.
Oh, really?
He absolutely hated it. He didn't want to let me out of my contract to go to Sale.
Really?
Which you can imagine, yeah, didn't go down well with me. Yeah, he was desperate for me just to play for Maxwell for a year, you know, one more year sort of talk. So certainly no relationship whatsoever. But I know that was Tommy on loan?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I thought Tommy Taylor was from Macclesfield.
Yes.
Oh, right. So did he not play at Macclesfield?
Yeah, but I can't remember if he played at Maxwell before he went to Sale, or if he went to Sale and then got loaned out to Macclesfield.
I'm not sure. I knew he was definitely there. The other one who went was Sam James.
Yeah, I know Sam played a few games, and Tom Morton as well, who he's been got released, I think, last year.
But he did
a stint last year as well at Macclesfield, and he's actually playing there now full time.
Yeah, it's a dangerous one, though, because if you built your team around on loan Premiership guys, and then they need to go back, all of a sudden you've got a massive hole.
Well, I remember one of the lads who still plays at Macclesfield now, a guy called Sam Moss, a ginger hooker.
Yeah,
he's an absolute stalwart. Like he played, I don't know, he must have played 250 games. So obviously you've got me training on a Thursday night and playing on Saturday. It just makes for, you know, it's not a great atmosphere, is it?
Yeah.
Because he's a really good bloke, but at the end of the day, he's training Tuesday, Thursday. He wants to play on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. That to me must be an absolute killer. Oh, I tell you, another one that did it as well is Cameron Neild.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He was a different one, wasn't he? Because he changed position. I know he covers 2 and 6.
Yeah.
So I think for him it was brilliant that he could go to a National League club, and probably I assume that he went and did a lot of hooking, did he? And trying to learn his trade that way.
So I think he played mostly on the flank for Macclesfield, but
oh, right.
then would fill in at hooker, yeah, like as and when.
Yeah.
But I think if he got his I'm not going to force you to comment on the other player, but if he got his throwing right, he could be dynamite.
Mate, he's a good player. He's a good player. Good player. It's one of those, isn't it? It's one bad game can ruin your reputation. You know, it's tough. And
yeah, I think he had his against Newcastle, which is a shame because he is, like I said, a really, really.
He was breaking through the year I got released from Sale, and he was brilliant. To be fair, he fit straight in. He was a young lad at the time.
I think he was the third highest carrier in the Premiership last year.
Yeah, I wouldn't surprise me. He's probably up there with tackles as well. Yeah, just out and out work rate.
Mm. I tell you, someone who really impressed me on Saturday is Jack Willis.
Yeah, mate, top player.
Wow.
Top player. Yeah, probably got a big future, hasn't he, if we're honest.
Yeah, I'd say so.
He carries well, and he's a good defender. He's aggressive. And he's actually, his younger brother is the captain of the 18s as well.
I'm glad you mentioned him. I have heard that there is a younger Willis somewhere, and that he's also pretty good.
Yeah, there was the old, his younger brother's better than him and all this, so I think Jack's taken that upon him to prove everybody wrong.
Well, do you think he's more naturally a 7 rather than a 6?
He's brilliant over the ball, mate, so it depends what you want. I know that Eddie Jones talks a lot about having a disruptive 7, doesn't he? Like someone who can tackle. So, you know, like Underhill, for example. But Willis, I think, offers a lot. He can carry aggressively, he hits hard, and he's outstanding over the ball.
His over-the-ball work, I think... Well, if you think about it, I guess Friday's game is a bit of an audition, really, for England's future 7. And Curry's are brilliant. I absolutely love watching him play. But I actually think they might have got a little bit outplayed.
You mean particularly that 7 versus 7?
Yeah, or just over the ball.
Yeah, I think it was the first 20 minutes or first 15 minutes. I think Willis had 2 jackal turnovers, didn't he?
Yeah.
It helped that we were defending for half the game, didn't it, to be
honest. Yeah.
But I know that both Curry brothers, you know, are similar sort of players. They like to get their hands on the ball and obviously offer quite a threat in defence as well.
Yeah. So let's just continue joining the dots then. You'd Sale, you get released, you're in Doncaster, and you make Modern. It back. Sorry, I always get those
that's
two
the
mixed
enemy.
Up.
You can't say that.
Yeah, absolutely right. What happens next? What do you do next?
Interesting, actually. So I had, midway through my first year, I nearly ended up at Leicester.
Oh, did you?
And it got blocked because, you know, budgets aren't big, so, you know, you lose your first choice hooker. Yeah. No blank to fill and no money. So that got blocked, and I signed up for another year and was fortunate enough to end up at Irish. Obviously, ending up at Irish, in comparison to my year at Sale, I was so much more ready.
Yeah.
You know, my 2 years in the Championship, playing regularly, you know, I felt very much ready to go and prove myself in the Premiership.
Were you more physically ready, as in were you physically bigger and stronger, or was it just a mental thing?
Mental thing. Obviously, I'd have another 2 years of full-time training in my body, so probably was a better athlete. Mm. But I think the main thing was mentally. Like I was saying before, you know, I go to Sale from a National 2 club, and I'm throwing a ball to Richie Gray, you know, 6 months yeah. before, I'm throwing the ball to my best mate, and you know, at Headlands Road. So, yeah, I was definitely more ready. And it was a year that didn't really go to plan. I actually fractured my eye socket in the last pre-season game and was out for, I can't remember how long I was out for. I think it was like 8 to 10 weeks. And it just, you know, killed my momentum because I felt like I was there or thereabouts.
Yeah, well, I tell you what's a weird one, right? I went to watch Sale train, and I was lucky enough to watch some scrimmages. Just going back to your thing about like the mental preparation or not being prepared. And what struck me was exactly how loud the hookers were. So like when the senior hookers got in the scrum or the layout is, you know, how much they take control of things, you know, the communication, that kind of thing. And that was the overriding difference between the guys like Rob Webber and I don't think Mark Jones was training that day, and whoever the second choice was. Mm-hmm. And then the academy lads do exactly the same thing. They don't push less hard, but it feels less intense because they've not got that leadership. And I imagine if you came in fresh to that environment, shouting at Richie Gray to push harder or whatever it is, it's just, it must be mind-boggling.
It is, and it was as well. I definitely caught me off guard. Because these are guys who I was watching the year before, and now I'm training with them. And like you say, you know, hookers probably do have that leadership role because, you know, look, I'll go in tomorrow, and ultimately I'm going to get judged on my set piece.
Yeah.
So, you know, to go in and start bossing around, you know, all these internationals, you know, probably wasn't something that came natural to me.
Yeah. The thing with hooking as well, and it must frustrate you, is when you get blamed for the bad lift or the bad jump, it's always the thrill. For whatever reason, it's always the thrill.
It is, yeah, but I think the attention to detail, it, you know, that's the outside view.
Yeah.
You know, you're a fan in the stand and you watch your line-out, you know, get stolen or whatever. Yeah. Straight away you think throw. But the attention to detail we put on that sort of stuff in reviews is, you know, lift poor, you know, jump poor, should have caught it, could have reached for it, or it is the throw and it's, you know, yeah, over under. So, you know, you don't really get hung out to dry.
Yeah, unless it's by the fans or the commentators, because, like I say, it's always the hooker.
Yeah, it can be infuriating, you know, because obviously it is opinions, isn't it? And, you know, the spectators at home will listen to the commentator, and the commentator might just, you know, he might think that might be his opinion, he might be wrong, he might be right. But obviously he says it, and then the thousands of people watching now think that.
So if I was a young, I don't know, let's just say a young guy in Ealing or somewhere getting invited into a Premiership squad for the first time, what would be your advice?
It's a tough question. I think you've just got to go and impose yourself.
Yeah.
I think it's a rugby environment is very alpha.
Yeah.
You know, you show any weakness and people will jump on it. So you've just got to go and impose yourself. I suppose, you know, if you are at Ealing and you're playing well and you've been invited to a Premiership squad, you're good enough to be in the Premiership squad. You know, that's the fact. So I suppose it's just, you know, go and impose yourself on the squad and go and do what you do every day for Ealing, because that was what got you there in the first place.
Yeah, act like you've been there before.
Yeah, probably, you know, that's a very good advice, isn't it? Because then it's confident, isn't it? They say, you know, experience is knowledge, isn't it? And if you act like you've been there before, you might have to blag it a bit, but yeah, probably not bad advice.
So when Sale released you, that must have been a bit of a knock.
Yeah, it was, but I was very aware that I wasn't good enough to be there.
I see.
So it, as much as it was a knock, that year, more than any other, I learned about myself and about what it took to be a professional rugby player.
That's awesome.
And, you know, because Tommy was playing week in, week out for Sale then.
Yeah.
and him and Mark Jones, and I watched them play, and you know, I picked apart their games, and I was thinking, you know, do I need to be fitter? Do I need to be this? Do I need to be that? But probably the main difference for me was the throwing.
Okay.
Because, like I was saying before, you know, a Premiership line-out compared to a National 2 line-out is a huge difference.
Is there?
Massive difference.
So that actually surprised me. I just thought the line-out was one of the areas where it wouldn't be that much different. I thought it would be like round the park and the pace of the game rather than the set piece.
Triggers change. For example, I'd never thrown a throw jump. So where you the ball is the trigger and then they jump to the jumper jumps to the ball. Do you understand what I'm
yeah,
trying to
yeah,
say?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just trying to think it through because I'm thinking how we do ours. Yeah, go on.
So I would basically throw at a target. Like they would go up and I would throw the ball
oh, and
you've to got
to
them
hit that
in the
target
air
before.
Yeah. Whereas you go into a professional line out and all of a sudden you're having to throw different shape balls, different pace balls, and it isn't easy at all. It's repetition.
That's interesting because, like, basically at amateur clubs, you jack the guy up and then you hit his hands.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter what the shape of the ball is as long as it gets those
yeah.
hands.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm fortunate enough now to have, one, I've got Andy Titterell, who, you know, you'll be aware of.
Yeah,
is our, you know, he's really good for the hookers, so we do a lot of throwing stuff with him. But also the lads who run our line out the second row is like Kieran Mile and James Gaskell. Absolutely brilliant with feedback. You know, not relentless with it. You know,
yeah.
earlier, you know, this sort of feedback, and it's helped me no end, to be honest.
Yeah, there are some lads in the Premiership who their line-out knowledge is just different level.
Yeah, and we found out this year, haven't we, with the new scrum laws that the line-out has become a really important source of ball.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to be, you know, a lot of scrum penalties and a lot of this, a lot of that. Now line out is somewhere where you can really start to expose defences.
Just explain that. Explain why the scrum laws have made
they've taken the hit out, haven't they? Everything's a lot closer for safety, and you know, rightly so. Really, players need to be looked after. And I think because they've taken the hit out, there's less margin for someone to be more dominant. So, you know, you're probably seeing, I don't know, look, I don't know what the stats are, but you're probably seeing more completed scrums than, you know, we've maybe seen in the past.
I think you guys are on like 94% or something.
I'll take that.
Completed, as in won your own ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're on about, yeah. I think they're on 96, you're on 94, something very, very close.
Yeah. It's still an area, look, props are gold dust, aren't they? Yeah. It's still an area that is hugely important, but all I'm saying is that the line out has recently become, you know, hugely important. Not that it wasn't before, but it's become, you know, hugely important for teams as an attacking weapon.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's why a lot of people were kind of thinking that Eddie Jones had gone with three locks rather than three back rows. And it does make sense. You just want the extra options.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, especially playing test match rugby, you need the ball.
Yeah,
you can't be playing test match rugby, you know, not winning any of your set piece, inviting these, you know, international quality attacks to come at you over and over again.
I love how rugby works in cycles. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. So everyone, you know, so Eddie Jones picks his three locks, and three locks are great, and you know, you're getting all the ball and you're nice and physical, until you meet a John Barkley, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, back to the drawing board.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting point, isn't it? I suppose England are probably fortunate enough that they can play someone like Marrow or Courtney Laws in the back row, and you still get that, you know, dynamism around the park. But like you say, they're tall blokes, and you know, while they are good over the ball, you know Scotland, you know, really did take us apart with three back rowers that were.
Yeah, it's just a different level of that skill, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was obviously something that they targeted in the week, and it was a game plan that, you know, unfortunately for us English, you know, got the better of us.
So tell me, what kind of shaped balls are you throwing in training? What do you like to do?
It's a pure mixture. I think the good thing about having knowledgeable line out callers is that they like to bring in new stuff and keep opposition guessing. Because look, defensively, they will look through the opposition coming up's line out. No end for triggers for, you know, movements that they might regularly use, their go-to lineouts. So we like to, you know, it's important to keep things fresh. And
so what kind of triggers have you found in the past?
Well, a lot of teams use is the ball.
Yeah.
And you obviously go in with multiple calls where if they're marking up certain areas, you can call somewhere else on the go spontaneously.
Yeah.
So, things like that, really. And then, you know, if you've got a pod of three, for example, and you're trying to move forwards, a lot of teams would use the back lifter to trigger it so he doesn't get left behind on the lift, so he's not late.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, you know, some teams might use the jumper as the trigger so that he just sets off. He has to catch him up and it forces you to be quicker.
I guess the problem with triggering on the ball is both packs have exactly the same information. So if the trigger's a ball and it's a front ball, that front jumper, the opposite front jumper, has basically got the same trigger as you.
Yeah, but look, defensive lineouts are really tough because lifters, for example, might be looking at the ball,
yeah,
or they might be looking at second row. You miss it for a split second, the ball's in and gone.
Yeah.
So it's not an easy skill at all. That's why, you know, you're seeing quite high percentage throwing starts, really.
Well, I'm not going to ask you which team, if a team at all, but have you managed to completely figure out a team in analysis and then pull it off during the game?
Look, I think it's the main thing that you hear Eddie Jones talk about loads, don't you? Like preparation,
yeah,
is absolutely everything. I think you'd like to think that you're going into games with a really good idea of what the team's about.
Mm.
Figuring out in terms of, I know exactly where they're going to throw this, or
yeah,
I know exactly what they're going to do, you know, that doesn't really happen. But you'd like to think that every team has their own DNA that you can work out and you kind of know what's coming. Exeter, for example, the stats are there for everyone to see. They keep the ball more than anyone else.
Yeah.
So defensively, you know that you're going to be defending for long periods.
I reckon game week against Exeter might be the easiest analysis of all, which is they're going to keep the ball and they're going to pick and go. And there's nothing that we can do about it.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because you know what's coming. Yeah. They're still sitting top of the league by miles, so they're obviously pretty good at it. And there's always, you know, more analysis you can do to maybe, you know, catch them out a little bit.
Yeah, I was watching them. Did you see the game this afternoon?
I didn't know.
God, they make it look so easy. It is ridiculous. That pick and go game, I'm starting to wonder if they do it slightly different to other teams, or if they're just better at the very same stuff that other teams do.
I think it's just like a game plan, isn't it? It requires buy-in, and all of their team buy into it.
Yeah.
All of their team buy into the breakdown. You'll see all eight forwards commit around the ball. It's not like, oh, we'll send a few, and if we get going, then everyone. It's literally, we're picking and going, we're committed.
Yeah.
This is what we're doing. Try and stop us.
The amazing thing for me about that is nobody ever panics, because they might be like really close to the line and then they'll be driven back to the 5 metres. But they don't change what they're doing. They just go straight back to it.
Yeah, ball retention's outstanding, isn't it? And I suppose very old school, isn't it? If we've got the ball, they can't score. It's a tough mentality, but defensively, it is very tiring defending so many phases, and,
yeah,
and that's what they're about, isn't it? It's purely, we'll work harder than you.
Now, as a fan, because what I tend to find is a lot of rugby players don't actually like rugby that much. I'm assuming you are actually quite a big rugby fan.
Yeah, well, I suppose so. Look, I played amateur, didn't I, until I was 22.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love playing with my mates. It's a very tough game. You know, playing it professionally has brought, obviously, a bit of a different outlook on it. But yeah, I absolutely love it. Look, I'm lucky to call it my job. So
when you see an Exeter style team, the pick and go game, do you enjoy that style of rugby, or is there a style of rugby that you prefer to watch?
I respect it, definitely, but I think it's an interesting point, because look, I'm a big football fan as well, and does it get to a point where teams have a duty to entertain, or is winning enough?
Well, so this is my point, really, which is, I think there's nothing more exciting than Exeter with the ball in the 5 metre line,
yeah,
because it's so inevitable. It's so gladiatorial.
And it is that, like, gladiatorial is probably a good word for it, isn't it? It's purely, like you were saying before, this is what we're doing, try and stop us. It's,
yeah,
very alpha, isn't it? It's, we're in your face and try and stop us, all the best.
Yeah, we've even told you the call.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting point you make. I think one thing that we frustrate ourselves with is like you're saying, is, you know, potentially we're not here to entertain, we're here to win games.
Yeah.
Don't get bored of doing simple stuff. Because the kicking game is a very interesting one. You know, you'll see teams kick the ball loads and loads and loads, and it can be quite infuriating, but at the end of the day, if it's winning you games, why would you change it?
Well, I think the thing about kicking people don't really understand is you need to kick in order to change the defensive team's shape,
yeah,
so you can do everything else. And it's not until they change their shape that you can keep the ball. If you keep the ball in hand, you're going to have a pretty miserable game. It's just going to be, you know, 15 on, you know, basically 13 on 13.
And again, with the new defensive laws as well, at the breakdown, the tackler can't get up in a tackle,
yeah,
anymore. He has to come from around the gate. You're seeing a 15-man defensive line.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to kick at some point because you run into brick walls.
Exactly. I think the kicking game as well in the Premiership has got so much better recently. As in the short kicking game.
I agree with you. I think almost like rugby league-esque, isn't it? In terms of like little grubbers into the in-goal, crossfield kicks. You see it in the Southern Hemisphere a lot, don't you? A lot of kicks in and around the 22-metre line trying to catch the back three out and stuff. And
Henry Trinder did some marvellous stuff this afternoon. Nearly scored what I think would be basically try of the season. I think he did it the other week. No, it was Woodward. Did you see that one?
No.
He kind of just chips it around, runs off the pitch.
Comes off the pitch and come back on.
Yeah. Absolutely class.
Yeah, there's no substitute for pace. It'd be nice to be that quick. Yeah.
Well, talking of pace, you're in a pretty pacey Wasps Wasps squad.
Yeah, I think we like to see ourselves quite a dynamic squad. We're probably not the biggest, are we? But we feel like we can bring a tempo to games that hopefully, you know, other teams can't live with.
So I mean, you'd never would have guessed that a team built by Dai Young would be in that mould. But is that your basic game plan, which is you want to outwork everyone else, you want to get to line out quicker, get to line outs quicker, keep the ball in play? Is that the basic premise?
Yeah, kind of. I suppose so. We when we're playing well, we're playing quick.
Mm.
So sometimes it's not even to catch other teams off guard so they can't rest. Because let's be honest, look, everyone's fit.
Yeah, it's that's a good point.
They're getting fitter and fitter. It's just purely when we're playing well, we're playing quick.
Yeah.
If we're slowing things down, you know, line out might, you know, not go to hand or, you know, mistakes at the breakdown. But if we're quick and we're dynamic, you know, we're on the front foot, you know, that's when we're at our best.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is so much pace in that side. I mean, would you say that's probably the fastest back line in the Premiership? It's got to be up there.
Potentially, isn't it? It is potentially. I suppose it depends what we put out.
Well, particularly with Elliot Daly at 13.
Yeah. It depends what we put out, but I suppose Kyle and Gabby are no slouches either. No, I agree with you, yeah. It's a very... The conditioning games in pre-season can be quite interesting.
Where's Carly Smith up to at the moment? Is he
banned, isn't he? He's swinging arm on Marcus Smith, still going on.
Oh, is it?
I can't remember if it's this week or the Saints week that he's back.
Now, I'd be interested to know what your answer is to this. But generally speaking, everyone that I've spoken to who has played with Carly Smith rates him as one of the best, if not the best player that they've played with.
Easily.
Really?
Easily up there. I don't know. I can't say best or whatever, but mate, natural skill set. I think it's the rugby league thing, you know, the square. You're finding teams play a lot out the back now, aren't you?
Yeah.
That is rugby league DNA.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
His skill set's brilliant, mate, honestly. And he must be 80 kilos wet through. And I tell you, he hits like a train.
Does he?
He hits like an absolute train.
Yeah, that is... Who has said... So Carl Ferns rates him as the best player that he's ever played with.
Literally top.
Yeah, completely independently, separate conversation, Rob Webber too. Said, just comfortably the best.
Yeah.
Organises everything, mouthy. Just pretty player.
Olden boy, isn't he? He's definitely up there, mate. And those two are pretty well-respected lads, aren't they?
Yeah.
You were saying that. Mate, in terms of just natural ability and skill set, definitely one of the best I've ever played with.
Yeah, it's just a shame because he's been there for 2 years. He's had a few injuries. But if they could have just kept him and Sippers on the field for extended periods of time together. I mean, I dread to think what they would have come up with.
You go for that 9, 10, 12...
Yeah,
is pretty scary to look at from a defensive point of view, isn't it? He's just been unfortunate, mate. He had his Achilles ruptured.
That's a nasty one, that.
And that was absolute hell. I was absolutely gutted for him because just trying to find some form and put some games together. And I know speaking to him that he does get frustrated because, you know, you asked me before if I love playing rugby. He loves playing rugby.
Does he?
You just have to speak to him about rugby to know that he loves playing rugby.
Do you know many lads that don't enjoy playing rugby or are not rugby fans? Because I've got a list of them.
I'm not going to name any names. I'm not going to name any names, but I think some people don't enjoy it as much as others, put it that way.
Yeah.
But I think, like I was saying before, though, when it becomes your job, it comes with the pressure and it comes and you can't escape it. Mm. Look, you finish training, any other job you finish and you go to the gym and whatever and you finish work for the day. You know, we finish training and you might go on social media and, you know, everyone's got an opinion on you.
Yeah.
And I think that is probably the main reason why boys, you know, might not like it as much as others.
Yeah, social media for rugby player must be an absolute nightmare because I get criticised quite a lot on social media. Most of the time, rightly so. Yeah. I mean, bang to rights.
Yeah.
But like, if you are, you know, if you're relatively sensitive about it, or you know, if you drop the pens on it, or that kind of thing, it must be a nightmare actually.
Yeah, I think something I've tried to do this year is try and stay in the middle. So while things are going well, don't be all up on, you know, really high and looking, reading all these great comments about you because ultimately,
retweeting.
Exactly, yeah, self-promotion, eh? Because, you know, inevitably you're going to have a bad game at some point.
Yeah.
And then you're going to read those comments and they're the ones that will stick with you. So I think it's quite important to just stay in the middle.
Oh, I completely agree. We might get, say, 10 positive comments about Egg Chasers or about Rugby Dungeon. But it'll be the one negative one that
yeah,
I think.
Of course. Yeah. And obviously, if it is a tweet or whatever, it can be lost in context as well. So,
yeah.
You know, you try and maybe look for the negative when actually it might have just been a passing comment or, you know.
Yeah, I've had to try and temper my social media engagement quite drastically
recently.
Were
you replying, were you?
Yeah, too much, probably. too much writing incendiary articles and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So you were Irish, were you, when the year... Was that last year, the year that you got promoted?
No, it was the year before. Year before. Got relegated.
Oh, really? Did you go to the New York game then?
I did. That was my first Premiership start.
Was it? So yeah. I went out to that game?
Yeah, it was mega. It was.
It was ace, wasn't it?
It was ace, but I think they maybe have been a little bit disappointed with the attendance. I can't remember the...
16,000 it was.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Was it actually...
Yeah.
Oh, so, right, sorry, I thought it was less than that.
No, you are right about them being disappointed, because... It was a 30,000 seat stadium.
Yeah.
So the Red Bull Arena, they said 16,000. Whether they actually got 16,000 in there or not,
exactly.
That was a cool place, wasn't it? Yeah, it was ace. It was absolutely ace.
And it was a good game, but summed up that year pretty well, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, what I remember about that game really was number one. I thought Sean Maitland looked like comfortably the best player in Irish shirt. That day.
Cheers, mate.
Sorry, second best player. Best player in the backs.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other one as well, which really surprised me, is how good Jackson Ray's feet were, of all things. He had a storming game.
Yeah, good athlete, isn't he?
Yeah.
Probably like modern day back rower, isn't he? Plays all across the back row. And I think, like you were saying before, probably potentially unlucky not to get some England recognition.
Yeah, I think you're right there, because he is so versatile.
Well, he plays, you know, pretty much every week, so... Yeah, and they're doing all right.
Very, very handy guy to have around. So you were working with one of my previous guests and someone who I respect very, very highly, Glenn Delaney.
Yes, good bloke. So the year I was Irish was when we brought across Tom Coventry from the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And a couple of others, Clark Laidlaw, and I think he come from the Blues. But they basically went full Southern Hemisphere. So Glenn took a back step.
Yes.
So he didn't really get involved in much of the coaching, sort of oversaw everything, but was still very much knocking about the place. And what a good bloke he is.
I think he's destined for great things.
Do you still?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, coaching world.
Yeah, so I think he was Canterbury. I think he's now with Crusaders.
Sure,
he's at Crusaders.
Yeah.
I just think he's going to continually progress because he's got the people skills, he's got the knowledge.
And that's huge, isn't it? I think a lot of people have the knowledge because they've been around the game for so long. and the ability to get the best out of players through, you know, like you say, people skills, the ability just to have a conversation. He's very good at that.
Oh, crikey, yeah. So I'm just, again, joining some more dots. So you were actually Irish at the same time as Andy Simons then?
Yeah.
So there must be a link there for you going over to Wasps.
I think I signed before Simmer.
Did you?
Yeah. But it's tough because, you're in a changing room where you're losing. You're kind of looking like you're destined for relegation. You can't be going up to your mate saying, "Oh, you know, I'm off to Wasps next year." You know what I mean? It's not a night. It doesn't make for good culture, does it? So, it's not something we spoke about. I think once I got announced, we then had a chat and whatnot. But he's one of my good mates at the club now. He's absolute.
Yeah,
legend.
He's a good lad.
He is a good bloke.
So, did you do the whole Irish consulate thing? Were you there for that?
What do you mean?
So the day before the game, London Irish were invited to the Irish consulate. Saracens went to the English consulate, and Irish went to the Irish consulate. And Tom Coventry was doing like interviews and stuff like that. Glenn Delaney was there.
Where was that?
Was there? It was actually in New York, in the Irish, in like the diplomatic building.
Oh right, no. Yeah, well, the day before was it?
Yeah, the day before, or 2 days before.
Right, no, didn't do any. I was staying humble, keeping my head down, not doing any of the media stuff, you know?
You guys were based in the New York Jets facility for that?
Oh, mate, yeah, that is mega.
I bet it is.
That was mega. So Sarri stayed in Manhattan.
Yeah.
So they were obviously seeing the sights, and because obviously, you know, people naturally will have mates at other clubs and whatnot. We stayed in some random place. I forget the name of it. Something
somewhere out in New Jersey, I'm guessing.
Honestly, it was miles away. So we were in this random, like, dingy hotel, but we used to get the coach to the Jets facility, and oh my god, that place is absolutely unreal. Big indoor 4G pitch with memorabilia, you know, all over. Stats. The stats just aren't on a, you know, an A4 piece of paper. They're literally like right in your face. This guy.
What like gym stats or like receiving stats
all
or?
Over so they have like because they have different squads, don't they? Have like an attacking squad, a defensive squad.
Yeah.
So we had meeting room, we used one of their meeting rooms, and I think it was, I don't know, attacking or whatever, and all their stats are up, you know, from previous years, so top whatever meters previous years.
Yours have to contact all sort of over, yeah, rushing yours.
You know what they're like, they're massively over the top, but that was one of the coolest places I've been to, that.
Yeah, their facility. I'm trying to think, is it something Meadows, isn't it? Or no, Happy Valley. I'm sure it's Happy Valley.
Is that what
it's called? Or is that where they do the training camp? I can't remember,
but I would, if you get a chance to go out there, mate, honestly, unbelievable.
So we had a really cool experience. So every time that there's a game on in the States, particularly a Premiership game, I'll go and try and watch it.
Yeah.
But we were at the All Blacks versus USA game, when, you know, the first of the United States series games, when it all became pretty fashionable.
Yeah.
And the United States media team could not be nicer to us. I mean, they were absolutely brilliant. The All Blacks rolled in, and it's like the Empire from Star Wars have just shown up.
Yeah.
And they're pretty cold with everyone. And we got kicked out of the stadium.
Right.
And this is like the media training day. So, oh, what, you media? Yeah, you got to go. So we weren't allowed to pitch side to watch. So we had to go back in. But it was it wasn't a match day. It was completely empty. So we got in a lift, and we just thought we'd go for a little wander around the stadium.
Yeah.
Went as high as we could in Chicago's Soldier Field.
Yeah.
And then watch the training from the owner's box, because it was open.
I know, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I know they like to keep. They feel like they're ahead, aren't they? You know, so they try to keep their training techniques to themselves. I know that, you know, you speak to like conditioners and stuff like that, trying to get hold of any All Black data, you know, the tests they run to get fit.
Yeah.
The tests, the strength, stuff like that. They try and keep it to themselves because...
Well, rightly so, I guess.
Yeah, mate, look, if they're trying to be the best... Well, they're the best team in the world, and they're that for a reason. They're trying to stay ahead. Yeah. Why would you start giving, you know, everyone else a chance?
The thing which really interested me about watching them train is they practice the haka. I thought, yeah, of course they practice the haka. When else would you do
weird.
It?
That is weird, isn't it? When do they do it? In the middle or at the start?
Yeah, right at the start. They run into the centre of the pitch, did a haka, then...
Started training.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And then warmed up.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, isn't it? I suppose, like I say, yeah, just, you know, they have to practice it, I suppose. You're not messing that up in front of everyone, can you?
I know. I don't think they should be allowed to do it, you know, on away grounds. That should be, like, the stipulation. You can do it at home, but when you come to our house...
Why?
just because you shouldn't be allowed to.
I think it's a spectacle, though, isn't it? I think people look forward to seeing the haka.
They do, but do you remember when Wales... So, the problem is, with the haka, like, there's loads of rules around it. So, like, you've got to respect it. Well, yeah. If you're forced to respect it, you're not really respecting it. You know, it doesn't really matter. You've got to be 10 yards away or, you know, this, that and the other. And Wales, one time only, got the right to respond to it. And they sung some song of some sort, I don't know.
Yeah.
But after that, they always wanted the right to reply. So the All Blacks, do you remember when they did it in the change room, the haka?
That rings a bell.
Yeah, so what happened is, because they weren't allowed, Wales weren't allowed the right to reply, they said, we're going to sing our song anyway. The All Blacks did the haka in the change room, not on the pitch. So my thing is, if you're going to do your dance, well, that's absolutely fine. You just can't do it here. And that'll be that.
It's an interesting point of view. I wouldn't, you know, I'd make him angry before you play
it. Yeah, that's a good point. I'd make him as uncomfortable as possible. I'd be turning up the heating in the changing room.
That's funny. You've just reminded me of a story when I was at Rotherham and we had a big game and we were in these dingy changing rooms. Our captain, he's at Nottingham now. he threw a massive bucket of water in their changing room before they had to go and get changed in it.
Did he?
Yeah.
Lad.
Make it as hell as possible for other teams.
I tell you where is it genuinely looks bad to change in is Bath.
It's just not very big.
It's tiny.
It's one of my favourite places to play though.
I think it might be the best sports stadium in the UK.
It's class. And I think just the place is nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you walk down from the hotel that you stay in and you go through the city and in through the gates and stuff. But yeah, the changing rooms are tiny, but...
Do you know, I think you need to be a special kind of player to play at Bath. I don't mean, like, physically or from a rugby point of view, but just because it's so insular.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean...
I'm guessing you can wander on Coventry without getting mugged. Mobbed.
Mugged or mobbed?
Mugged. Both. Mobbed.
Hopefully both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. I think that's one thing that that the boys... liked about London is the ability to disappear.
Yeah.
But we, I think it's a hard one, isn't it? Because it's part and parcel of your job.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, like it or not, you have become someone in the eye of the public, so they're going to like bumping into you. But a lot of the boys live in and around Leamington.
Oh, nice.
And that's actually quite a small.
It's lovely, Leamington.
Place. It is absolutely lovely. But when there's 4 6-foot-8 lads walking around, it's pretty obvious that they play for Wasps.
That is, that's a bit of a tell.
It is, isn't it? And I think you kind of, when you're in amongst it every day, you forget how big everyone is.
Yeah.
And then you do go into these places and you're like, oh my God.
Well, I mean, even the small guys are big.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's it. It's getting worse as well. Well, I say worse, it's just, you know, boys are getting bigger, boys are getting stronger, boys are getting fitter.
How big are you? Because you don't seem, for instance, like, I mean, you're not like Rob Webber size.
No. I'm, well, rounded up.
Yeah.
5'10".
5'10". Well, yeah. 6 foot for contracts.
Yeah, exactly. 6 foot. And 110 kilos for contracts.
Exactly.
Well, and then I fluctuate between, you know, either side of 100 kilos.
Mm.
But, you know, I'm one of those people that's always been told that, you know, you're too small, you're this and you're that. So I just take it upon myself that, hey, if I'm going to be small, I've got to make sure that I'm physical.
Yeah.
Because the moment, you know, you're not physical, that you are going to get a question for being too small.
Do you know what? I think maybe Hooker might have the greatest range of body types.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a bad shout. Just like talking about, you know, like you said about Rob Webber there.
Yeah.
You know, big bloke. Tommy's like you. If you were going to draw a physique that you wanted at Hooker, that's probably TT, isn't it? And then, yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Well, I mean, actually, Wasps are a perfect example of it. They've got you, Tommy Taylor, and Ashley Johnson.
And Ash, yeah.
I mean, Ashley Johnson, what, 6'2 or something?
Yeah, including his hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably like, yeah, 6'2, and obviously a completely different body shape to me and TT. It offers completely different set of skills, I suppose, doesn't he? He's a big old boy.
Now, when you're arranging your front rows, do you do anything like... like, you try and put the big, like, the taller guys together or the shorter guys together? Is it just whoever's there goes?
It's just whoever. Well, it's just if you picked, you play. There's no, you know, me going with someone like Marty Moore.
Yeah.
Or me going with Coops. Jacob Woolley, you know, there's no difference, really. Marty's probably my height. He'll hate me for saying that. He thinks he's taller than me. So you might think that would make it less awkward, but not necessarily.
So the only reason I ask that is I have heard of teams putting out a tall front row, and then a shorter front rule. I tell you where I've heard that, Mac.
It's the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, it was relatively recently. But, you know, they've got the guys, so they, right, we'll have the taller guys together and then the shorter guys together.
I think it's tough because, naturally, if you look at a scrum position, it doesn't really suit longer physiques, does it?
So no.
Taller props, if you put them all together, you know, and it goes down, it kind of just looks that they're taking it down because it's not a natural...
Props are getting bigger, though. I mean, it used to be relatively rare to get guys who are like, you know, six foot big. But
I think Carl Heyman was the original like tall prop, wasn't it?
Yeah, 6'4".
Was he 6'4"?
Well, they had, if you think about them, they had Carl Heyman at tight head. Was he tight head?
Yeah.
And then Andrew Sheridan at loose head, and they're both 6'4".
Yeah.
And they're animals.
It's an alright front row, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's an interesting point, mate. But it's the first I've heard of it. I don't look forward to scrummaging with one person more than the other.
Do you not have any favoured combinations then? You don't have someone that you like playing with at tight head or loose head?
Scrummaging's tough, isn't it? Because 1 week you can be put, you know, up in the air. And the next week you're flying forwards. It's kind of form comes into it as well, isn't it? And I suppose you kind of pick your best side. If you're coming up against a scrum the following week that is notoriously got a big scrum,
yeah,
then maybe you do start to think about putting your best combinations out. But it's a tough one, isn't it, because props, just like kickers, are either in form or not in form.
Yeah, it's props are weird because I'm not sure if it's like, you know, in fighting terms, style, what's the saying, like styles make matchups or some such thing, or is it just raw power? I mean, how much can technique really help if you are, again, let's use them again, Andrew Sheridan, say?
I think what it is the scary combination would be that if he was technically good and that big,
yeah,
that's the end goal, isn't it? But I suppose it helps being absolutely massive. You know, I suppose you can maybe get away with having a bit of a worse technique, but it's you only have to bump into props to have a chat about scrummaging about how technical it is.
I have got a massive conspiracy. I think at the top level, right? Yeah, of course. I think the lower down the levels that you get, there's almost a conspiracy where props make it more technical than it actually needs to be in order to keep other people away.
Couldn't agree more.
There is no way.
Look, I'm... Especially, it must be so hard to ref.
Yeah.
Because let's be honest, a prop retires, he ain't thinking about going into refereeing, is he?
No.
So you very rarely find a front rower that becomes a ref. So especially when you go into lower leagues and you're talking about all this technical stuff and this and that, you know, realistically... Referees are going to probably just award a team that's going forwards. You don't really know
rightly
what's going
so.
On. Yeah, yeah.
As long as you're
so.
Going forward, do what you want.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose there is an argument for that as well, but you don't want it to become messy and then we get the resets and then we get, you know, the fans start clapping, telling, hurry up.
Yeah, well, I mean, my favourite 7 minutes of rugby was Sale versus Bath at the Rec in the corner, and it was just 7 minutes of scrums, and it was awesome. And until someone yielded, yellow card, then yielded.
Yeah. It's a really interesting point, the scrum. I think the scrum is probably where rugby gets its identity.
Yeah.
I think without the scrum, it's not rugby union. That is, you know, for me, that is rugby union. So I think it's something that is constantly we're trying to improve, isn't it? We're trying to make it safer, but at the same time, we want more completed scrums because we don't want it to become an issue and start ruining games. But, you know, if people like you are enjoying 7 minutes of scrums,
I love it.
We're in a good place, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, I can't understand why you wouldn't. It's, particularly if one team is going forward and it's a penalty. No, that's when it's good. Not with the resets. It's when you win the penalty and then you go and have
you
another
scrum. Yeah,
that is
like,
awesome.
Right, here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's like what we were saying about Exeter. It's just very alpha, isn't it? You know what's coming. Try and stop us. It's
exactly
a
right.
Pushing contest.
So do you have... I mean, I guess not now because you're so far into your career. But growing up, did you have a hooker in mind who you would try and emulate?
Towards the end of my, I suppose, Stockport career, when I, you know, 20, 21, 22, I love being entertained. So I love people like Shout Brits is the guy who stands out for me because obviously he's still playing. Just because he's entertaining, isn't he?
He's brilliant.
I wouldn't say that I try and be like him because he's Shout Brits for a reason. But you know, like I just love being entertained. You know, you've got the opposite spectrum that when I used to go and watch Sale, and they had like a Sebastian Bruno type, and
yeah,
you know, a big aggressive scrummaging type hooker. But just interesting to look at, aren't they? Because just massive blokes.
Yeah, well, Sebastian Bruno was... I tell you what, France have got some awesome, awesome options at hooker.
Yeah, Garrido's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah.
And is the...
Cat or Chat or whatever.
Yeah, however you want to say it. Yeah, he's obviously very good. And they've got Tolofua, who's at...
oh, yeah, of course.
At Sarri's, who has had a bit of stop-start season. And have you seen the... I don't know if he's French. I assume he is French. The La Rochelle hooker?
Trying to think who that is now.
He socks down.
So he's obviously cool.
He's about 20... I reckon he's 21. And both times we played him, he was one of their best players.
I'm trying to think who that is now.
I'll have a look afterwards, mate. Yeah, really, really good player.
Yeah, that is a team which seemed... Well, I say come out of nowhere. They haven't come out of nowhere. They were very good last year. But before that, I mean, who on earth were La Rochelle? Yeah. I've got some of these lads are absolute dynamite.
We went away to La Rochelle in the Champions Cup, and it's an unbelievable, it's classic France, you know, like very very good atmosphere. But they play, don't they? They offload. They've got that Antonio Tired, who is massive and arms free, trying to offload the ball.
Well, that Bottier, I mean, where's he come from?
Well, he's a back row centre.
Back row centre, obviously. Why not?
That's everyone's dream, isn't it? He played back row against us, and yeah, again, he was brilliant. I think he's nominated for... I can't remember, did someone won that yet? He's nominated for European Player of the Year, wasn't
Probably. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, brilliant player. But yeah, they've come out of nowhere, but in terms of, you know, entertainment value...
Of course, because they were in your group.
Yeah.
And just to back up what you were saying there, my colleague Tim, who I do the other podcast with, I think he actually did the game out there, you're running around with the mics.
Yeah.
And he was saying that the atmosphere is brilliant. So that might be one of our away trips.
Mate, it's absolutely brilliant. I don't know what it's like as a place. We didn't get to see it much of a place, and it was chucking it down when we turned up. But the stadium itself is brilliant.
Do you ever get time to see the places that you visit? Or is it very much business in, get back on the bus and go again?
It depends where you go, really. I mean, what, do you mean European or just generally?
Both, actually.
I suppose if we're staying over... we like to get there, you know, mid-afternoon where lads can get some treatment and get in the pool and do a bit of a session. And then you're free to do whatever you want.
Mm.
So some lads are different, aren't they? Some lads like to go and get an early night because they might have a young kid.
Yeah.
Me, for example.
Exactly.
Or, you know, some lads like to go and have a coffee with the boys because they don't really want to think about the game so much.
Yeah.
So we have the time to go out and see these places and... You know, some places, obviously, like we were saying about Bath, you know, it's nice to go out there.
Yeah,
it's a lovely place, isn't it?
I was talking to one of the guys in Glasgow, and they went. He went down to Treviso, and that's just the only reason that I asked, really, because he said it was awesome to get time to look around the town and just soak it in, because they go there, they get back on the plane, and then they come back.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely, no, I agree with you. And there's some great places to go, especially in Europe. You should take advantage of it, really, shouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad you mentioned something you said before, coffee with the boys. One of my favourite stories is a James Haskell one.
Okay.
Where apparently they go around the room, I think it was an England camp, asking what they're going to do with their spare time to contribute to their lives after rugby. And one of the guys actually said, coffee with the boys. I mean, that was his actual thing.
Coffee with the boys.
So what have you got planned post-rugby? Are you not thinking that far ahead yet?
My last couple of years, obviously, I've signed a new contract now. So, you know, that was kind of that out of the way. But I've had... I've got a 15-month-old daughter and I'm getting married in May.
Oh, are you?
So it's been absolute chaos. So actually trying to... I sound like I'm making excuses. Don't I? So actually trying to get things in place. Like I'd like doing a bit of coaching, but, you know, it's in the background at the moment. But whether I want to go forward with that is one thing. And maybe look into... Just because it's funny you said that. Maybe look into opening up some sort of coffee shop somewhere.
Ah, okay.
But this is just kind of in the background at the moment. Me and another lad, Ben Harris, who's a proper at Wasps. So it's there, it's an idea, and that's all it is at the moment.
Well, we do a few podcasts from here, and the other one is, can't remember it now, bloody hell, Whippets and Flatcaps.
Okay.
Which is John Wilkin and Mark Flanagan.
Yeah.
And they've got a tremendous little business going in Manchester. It's exactly that.
It's called Pot Kettle Black, isn't it? My because obviously I've discussed this with the boss. She went into Manchester for coffee and bumped into this place, obviously not knowing who these people were.
Yeah.
So this is Mega. Picks up his business card and gives it to me, and I'm like reading it like, John Wilkin. She's like, yeah, I've just been chatting with John Wilkin. I was like, oh, get you. You and John top boys, are you?
Yeah, he is a seriously, seriously cool guy, is John.
I didn't realise he was still playing.
Oh, yeah. Mate, he's like some sort of like philosopher monk.
Oh, right.
He's a pretty deep thinker, which is not what you expect for a rugby league kind of guy. No. And between the two of them, they've built an absolutely tremendous business.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been in there when we played Sale last year. And it's class. Yeah, it's a lovely place.
Yeah, they've even got like a head of coffee.
Head of coffee.
Yeah, and he wanders around and sources things.
Girl.
Yeah, there's actually the tradition of rugby players and coffee shops is a long and storied one.
Well, it is, because we sat up a lot, and yeah. And you know, after training, you don't want to go straight home. You know, you might have a finish at half two. Mm. You just go and sat with the lads, don't you? Over a flat white.
There must be someone in Wasps already that has a coffee brand.
Not a coffee brand, but coffee shop, I know Elliot is opening up a coffee shop in Leamington.
Is he?
I think that's Coffee Lab, because that already exists, so he's just got involved with that in Leamington.
Okay.
And I think, obviously, before Jonesy retired, I think he was thinking about doing that.
Jonesy?
Sam Jones.
Ah, right, yeah.
Which, obviously, really sad story.
Yeah, it is.
He was going to go in with Elliot, but I think because of the retirement thing, he's going to have to look into something else, I think.
Yeah, well, there's Jika down there. Oh, Bath, which has obviously started the whole thing. There is...
What's they got?
Jika was... well, who was it? That was, like, Lee Mears and all those boys.
Oh, right, the old boys.
Yeah, and then there was... I think Chris Robshaw might have a cafe. I think there's Sam, what's his name, down in Worcester. He's got
one. Sam Smith.
Yeah.
That was where a little bit of the motivation came from, actually.
Oh, was it?
The RPA put on a little steak and eggs breakfast at Gaucho for us. And
nice.
He spoke. He was the speaker, just talking about his transition, because he was forced into retirement, wasn't he? Mm. Lovely bloke, really lovely bloke. And he's just opened up his second spot now. He's got one in Worcester, one in Birmingham. Yeah. Wayland Yard is.
That's the one. Oh, and there's also a Couch Ground Coffee, who is Dave Seymour. That's a coffee brand.
Right. Okay.
Then.
So that's actual coffee that he's selling.
Yeah, yeah. But he's got like a little van, which he doesn't drive it personally.
Does he do it at the ground?
Yeah, he's got the concession at Sale, and he's got one in Spinningfields too.
Oh, right, nice. Yeah, because I think some of the investors at Sale are Spinningfields, is that right?
They were a sponsor, yeah.
Okay.
They were sponsored. I don't know if they are investors. The investors at the moment.
So there is this connection there, isn't there?
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
I love it around that area. It's really cool spot, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing, actually, that Sale don't make more of that when recruiting players. Because, don't get me wrong, I mean, Leicester's nice, but it's still Leicester.
Yeah.
You know, if you're playing, like, in the Midlands, you know, Northampton, yeah, great for shoes, but don't really want a night out there.
Yeah, no, yeah, interesting point. I think it is a point that they used to get people there, because Manchester is, well, look, are you Manchester bloke?
No, North Wales, and then moved over here.
Ah, well, we're obviously in Manchester now. Both obviously love it ourselves, but I think they probably do use that to try and get boys over.
Yeah, have you found it settling down in Coventry?
Really well, really easy. Because we come from London, so that was chaos, as you can imagine. Coming from Stockport to London is quite a big difference. It's just quieter. My missus was pregnant, so she settled in really well, because you obviously join in with like the classes and you meet a load of other pregnant ladies and they're all really nice, and she's obviously moved into a new area and got really friendly with a load of people, so we absolutely love it there.
So are you in Leamington too, did you say?
I'm in Kenilworth.
Oh, right. We had our pre-season there.
Oh, right, on the hills. Club. Oh, at the rugby club?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's a park in Kenilworth called Abbey Fields, and it's very hilly.
Oh, is it?
That's where we do a bit of our hill training, yeah.
So the coach of Kenilworth is...
Yeah, it's Whitehead.
Chris Whitehead.
Did a session with them before Christmas, just after Christmas.
Yeah.
And he's a lovely bloke.
He is, he's a good lad.
He's a premiership winner, is that right in saying that?
Is that right? No, because they won it last year, didn't they? So Chris would have retired. Maybe he was. No. Hang on.
How long has he been retired? I'm not
too
sure.
That's a good question. I don't know. I think he might have just missed it.
But he was a really nice bloke. Yeah, really easygoing. And I think I don't know how he's ended up in Kenilworth. You know, going from Devon to...
Well, the thing which struck me is obviously he was frustrated at Hooker because he plays himself at 10 for Kenilworth.
Yeah, well, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Played Hooker your whole life. It's like, yeah, over you go. I'm playing 10, boys. And captain.
Yeah, they've got a phenomenal eight as well. But not that anyone wants to hear about how good Kenilworth are. Excellent. Right, mate. Well, we've been going at this for over an hour now. So shall we call it a day there?
Yeah. No, happy days. Thanks for having me.
No, absolute pleasure. And next time you're up, we'll have to do it again.
Top man.
Oh, actually, before we go, let's do the obligatory thing. Where can we find you on social media and stuff?
Twitter is cruise_dog2.
Yep.
And Instagram is cruisedog.
There you are. Thank you very much, Mr. Cruise Dog.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president. You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about...
Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.